session of the House Workforce and Economic Development Committee to order. And just a couple of announcements here. First of all, we are not going to be hearing House Bill 3363 today for a couple of reasons. First of all, that issue is going to be heard in Revenue on Wednesday. And secondly, there are major amendments that are necessary for this bill which have not yet been prepared. And the chair will express his frustration that this is like virtually every other bill he's had written. It's less than perfect. And this is unrehearsed, too. And they say never ask a question unless you're sure of the answer. Am I the only one that's had virtually all of his bills come out backwards?
I think so.
Thank you.
No comment.
Anyways, for all of those who turned out because they were greatly excised over the unfunded mandates that it would present for local governments, I want to assure everyone that I am opposed to the greatest extent possible to unfunded mandates. And I can only say that whoever wrote that bill took great liberties when they wrote it up. So it was a long bill. It was a good bill, but certainly not where I intend to go. Secondly, House Bill 3298 is going to be carried over until Wednesday because the sponsor of the bill is unable to make it here this morning, and we certainly want to provide him the greatest opportunity possible to be here when that bill comes up. With that, I am going to open a public hearing on House Bill 2804. And like to recognize Representative Lim. And Representative Nathanson. Good morning to both of you.
Good morning. It's Monday morning. A bright morning, and glad to see you. I hope you had a wonderful weekend, which I did. And good morning, this John Lim, for the record, state representative from District 50, which is Gresham area. And just want to thank you, the chair, for hearing House Bill 2804, which is the possible task force creating to study the method and advantage of attracting Olympic Games to Oregon sometime in the near future. Mr. Chair and members of the committee, when we are thinking about the Winter Olympic Games, we might say, oh, our state is too small and we don't have any experience. We don't have any expertise on this area. We are just mid-sized U.S. cities in the nation, and how could we do that? That's a natural question, which I would still think the same way. But we need to came out of that box and think big. And Oregon's the motto is we are the dreamers, and we need to dream big. This could happen. I believe it's 1988 or 89 that there has been a Winter Olympic Game in Calgary, Canada, and then it's a small town, but they were able to do it successfully. Now everyone knows where the Calgary is. And we have an identity problem of the state and the city. When I say I'm from Portland, they think it's a Portland, Maine. And when I said I'm from Oregon State, sometimes they don't know where they are. And I have to explain Oregon State is between Washington and California in the Pacific coast. Well, they say, oh, you know. So out of that concern, I introduced a legislation, this House Bill 2804. As a matter of fact, 1999, when I was a senator, I also introduced the same bill, which passed out the Senate, and I don't think it's acted in the House. As a matter of fact, before that, state treasurer, I'm sure you remember the treasurer, his name was Hill. He ran for the governor. Do you remember? And he introduced sometime even before that, long time ago, to have a Winter Olympic in our state. So as far as I know, this is a third try. Hopefully, this time, we might be able to create some kind of a task force looking into the future Winter Olympic game. Let's not say this is not the things of our state. This is too big. You know, it's not going to happen. But let's think about it. And then I'm not saying we have to have it, but we are creating simply task force. Whether there is a possibility in the future we can have this Olympic game. I want you to think that when we have a successful Winter Olympic game, as far as I know, it's maybe 2 weeks, the game, we will put our state and our city in the world map. And everyone should know, oh, Portland, that's a great city which that held the Winter Olympic Games. We have the mountains, we have resources, we have people, we have talented people, and pretty soon my good friend Jack Elder, who himself is an Olympian, and he's going to testify. We are fortunate to having him living in our city. The payback will be great. It will create the tourism. It will bring the outside of billions of dollars from the outside of our city, our state, throughout the nation, and throughout the world. So the economic impact in our state will be greater than what we are giving out. I'm proud to introduce the House Bill 2804. I hope that the chairman and the members of the committee seriously think about this issue. And I'm not sure whether I can say that, but it could be after 2020, sometime later. And I might be able to see it happen, but I want to do something. Even though I'm not able to get a direct result for myself, but future generation, this will be a great result for the future economic development. And this will be a great gift to this great to the people of a great state. Thank you very much, Mr. Chairman and members of the committee.
Thank you very much, Vice Chair Lim. Representative Nathanson, we have a precursor here to the Olympics coming up shortly.
Yes, yes. Good morning, Mr. Chair and members of the committee. I'm Nancy Nathanson. I'm a state representative from District 13, North Eugene. Every 2 years, the Olympics provide the world an opportunity to witness an amazing and heavily publicized collaboration between local communities and the larger global audience. Media outlets from all over the world provide almost continual coverage of the fierce competition featuring the gracious community that plays the host to the event. Oregonians have grown accustomed to watching these events either on television or making long journeys to faraway locations. During the games at Lillehammer and Salt Lake City, we watched beautiful cities showcase their picturesque settings while world-class athletes competed on their grounds. So why not Oregon? Our abundant natural resources and sports, cultural and performing arts venues provide an equally spectacular setting for such a high-profile event. Oregon explored the option of pursuing an Olympic bid previously, but circumstances didn't quite allow us to pursue it. It's time again to begin exploring the dream of hosting such an event. The possible can be seen as the achievable. This is not a pipe dream. In July 2008, Eugene will host the U.S. National Olympic Trials for track and field. This high-profile event can be an excellent test of our ability to perform as a host on the world stage. The benefits of hosting an Olympic event lasts for years. The Salt Lake City Games reported a profit of nearly $60 million. Much of that was distributed back to local groups and projects. Furniture and equipment was distributed to schools and charities. Money was pumped into the local and state economy as efforts to prepare for the Games spawned economic development. During such an event, the direct economic benefits created by thousands of visitors go well beyond lodging and food. They extend to other products and services, cultural and performing arts. Hosting the Olympics would give Oregon's economy a boost. We would have jobs for workers to prepare the infrastructure and facilities, businesses would ramp up for the influx of visitors, and permanent infrastructure would be put in place that would continue to draw for future events and visitors. Often it takes several applications and many years competing with the rest of the world to win a bid. Let's start now for the future and support the task force that Representative Lim has proposed. This is the first step in making the dream a reality. Thank you for your time.
Thank you very, very much. Questions or comments for our colleagues? Representative Holby, who represents the track field, correct? That's in your district?
Oh, that is true. Very good. And I know this Representative Barnhart is down there going, yeah. Because he's on the other side of the street.
It's right across the street.
Yeah.
I understand.
But anyway, I'm curious, representatives, either one, that this bill is strictly about the Winter Games and whether, you know, we should think about the Summer Games too, perhaps, as, you know, because it seems like we're viable for both since, as Representative Nathanson has pointed out, we're already doing the trials for the Summer Games here in Eugene.
Mr. Chair, Witt, and Representative Harvey, I think you are a little ahead of me on this issue, and I think the Winter Olympics in size is much smaller and we can handle better, and after that in my thoughts that we could have a Summer Olympic Games sometime in the future. Of course I thought about it, but I think Winter Olympics to begin with is more appropriate, but I wholeheartedly that agree we need to have a Summer Olympic Games. So we have great facilities, and I think we can do it. Would you like to share any thoughts?
I won't expand. Thank you.
Okay.
Additional questions? Yes, Representative Dahlem.
Yes, Representative Nathanson, this is, or Representative Lim, either one, this is apparently the third try. If you're going to give this committee some advice, what happened the last two times? What prevented us from moving forward?
Since first one, I heard in the newspaper in the Oregonian before I became a legislator, and there has been a great support from the Oregonian, and I believe this is one of the articles that the Oregonian written by, I think it's Tuesday, May 24, 1988, Novera Oregon Project, then a bid for Olympics. So I think this was the first one. Second one I introduced in 99, as I stated, it's passed of the Senate, and then I think in the House it just It didn't pass out in the House. And then this is a third trial. I'm sure we have a third charm. And I hope this time that we shall be able to pass both House and Senate, send a strong and a resounding message to the Oregonian in a positive way. Yeah, we can do it. This is a great thing for our state. And I believe with our legislative leadership and a strong leadership from the governor, whoever the governor might be at the time, and I think this could happen. Would you like to share any additional thought?
The only additional thought I had, Mr. Chair and Representative Dahlem, the only additional thought I would have is that the previous bid, which was in the 80s, this is speculation on my part. I didn't go back to study legislative history. But because it was in the 80s, there had been an extremely serious downturn in the economy that lasted for quite a few years, and that could have impacted our ability to either prepare a bid or have the confidence to come through on what would need to happen. That's my only guess, just because of the timing and what had happened in the economy.
Thank you both very, very much. Certainly appreciate your bringing this economic development proposal before us. It's truly important. And Representative Nathanson, I want to wish you and our other two colleagues from the Eugene Springfield area here the very greatest of success here in the trials.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Before I call up our next witness, I'd just like to ask the audience, if you please. We're getting some feedback here through the audio system, and it may be that someone has an electronic device that's on. So if anyone has a cell phone or a BlackBerry or whatever that's on, if you please turn it off, that would be appreciated. Next, I'd like to call up Jack Elder, please, President of Oregon Sports Action. Good morning, sir, and welcome.
Well, good morning. For the record, I'm Jack Elder. I live in Milwaukee. Do you need my address? No. Okay. I'm the president of Oregon Sports Action, which was formerly called the Winter Organization Oregon, or WOO. And we started out as WOO 96, and he ended as WOO 98. In the time period that we looked at bidding for the Winter Olympic Games, the International Olympic Committee moved the games around. They moved them from the same year to off years. And the reason for that was financially they decided that the world could not afford two Olympic Games in the same year. The advertising revenues and the various other revenues just didn't match up for the costs of the Olympic Games combined in one year. So offsetting it was the reason for that. I brought three packets, and obviously I don't expect you to read them today, or maybe you will glance through them. In the blue book, you will find an economic development study. It was done by a young man who was doing his master's degree for Portland State University, and it was on the economic impact of the Olympic Games on Oregon in the city of Portland. In the gray packet, you will find a technical assessment. That was a study that we completed in the late 1980s. It was done by an engineering firm out of Calgary, Canada, which was the engineering firm for the 1988 Olympic Games. And basically what it states is that we technically can host the games. We have, first thing you need is a mountain. You need snow. You need roads. You need sewers. You need water. You need all of these things that technically, if you don't have this, you can't do it. You need a mountain that's high enough, shaped in the right shape so you can put a downhill on it. You need a snow area that has certain variations in it that have a long enough area for your cross-country skiing. We have those. We have them in several different locations. Which ones we would use is another question. Also, I included a much slimmer piece which includes an oversight of my testimony, and several newspaper articles that were published in the late 1980s, from the Business Journal to the Oregonian. And those were just a few of the support pieces that we received from the editorial department of the Oregonian. One of the things that I would like to point out was that Samuel Caff was the man who originated this concept. He was watching the Sarajevo Olympic Games, and he said, well, if Yugoslavia can do it, certainly Oregon can do it. And then he started proposing things like opening ceremonies in Eugene, speed skating on Sparks Lake in Central Oregon, you know, bobsled and luge. He was put somewhere. I can't remember where it was. And I went to him as an Olympian, and I said, Sam, you can't put speed skating on Sparks Lake. You know, it's a concept that won't work. The water is not clean enough. You know, it's not consistent enough. You have to have artificial surfaces. And he looked at me and he said, well, if you know so much about it, why don't you help me? And I said, all right. And for the next 2 years, Sam led the effort, and then I took over after that and continued it until 1989. We were up against Salt Lake City and Anchorage, Alaska, in the concept of bidding for the games, along with the Reno-Lake Tahoe area. As you all know, Salt Lake City became the host city. They were a long shot at the beginning, just like everybody thought we were. I can tell you a story that years after the Salt Lake Games, I was sitting next to the wife of the husband who was the president of the Games, the bid effort, and I introduced myself and said, I'm Jack Elder, you know, Olympian in the sport of luge. And she said, oh, I know you. I said, you do? Nobody knows luge people. Name one person who's ever been in luge in the United States. And she said, oh, yeah, I know you. My husband came home one day, long-faced, felt very bad. And I said, what's wrong? And he said, I just heard that Portland's going to bid against us. And I never knew that that emotion was there. I always thought that we were a bit of a long shot. But we were taken very seriously by our competition. We have an opportunity. We could possibly do it. We could potentially do it. I don't know if any of you know that in the early 1960s, there was a bid that was submitted to the United States Olympic Committee to host the Summer Olympic Games in Portland, that it was predicated upon the passage of a bond measure that would build a stadium in North Portland that would host the opening ceremonies. The bond measure failed by a few hundred votes. And that was the end of the summer bid, because it was contingent upon that. Detroit became the city that was the U.S. representative in the international bidding process, and Detroit didn't get the games. They were bidding for the 68 games, which wound up in Mexico City. So as the president of Oregon Sports Action, we are a nonprofit that's been in existence since 1984. Our purpose is to develop Olympic sport at this time, the number one. The number two is to bid for and host a Winter Olympic Games at some future date. At one time, those two purposes were reversed. We switched them around when we changed our name from WU to Oregon Sports Action. Rather than me continuing on, I would prefer to take questions about the process, about the politics of it. Although I will cease with one statement, and Baron de Coubertin is the man who formed the modern Olympic Games in 1896, and he's been quoted frequently stating that it is not the winning that is important, it is the taking part. It's not necessarily the success, it's the struggle. And any time you bid for an Olympic Games, any time as an athlete you decide you're going to try to be in the Olympic Games, the first thing you have to do is to be absolutely, painfully honest with yourself. And that's honest as to whether or not you have the skills as an athlete, whether you have the determination to make it to the Games, and have the luck that you don't get hurt or injured at the wrong time. And the same thing goes for a city, a state, a region, you have to look at yourself and say, can we do this? If we can, should we? Now? If not now, when? If not us, who? If not here, where? Somebody will host those Olympic Games. Some city will. They'll step forward. You'll learn all about them. You'll hear the tales. The tales might be from Oregon. So, I thank you very much. And if you have any questions, I'd attempt to answer them. Or I'll get the answer.
Representative Jerome.
Kind of following up on Representative Holvey's question, and this is really going to hurt to say this, but Eugene has a reputation for track and field. Why Winter Olympics versus Summer Olympics?
The size of the Summer Games in comparison to the size of the Winter Games. The Summer Games are 10,000 athletes, now capped at that. And the Winter Games, approximately 3,000. So you're looking at a factor of about 3. Financially, it's more like 5. The cost of the Winter Games, somewhere between $1.7 billion and $2 billion once you build all of the infrastructures and host the games. Whereas the Summer Games, you're looking at a factor of $10 billion, $12 billion. You're also looking at many more facilities, huge number of facilities. The housing of 10,000 athletes in one village is problematical. Whereas the housing of 3,000 athletes, probably in a separate, two or three separate villages, which would happen here, would be more logical. But as we get bigger, as the state, the population grows and the cities get larger, yes, it's a possibility.
Would it be possible to piggyback with Seattle?
Well, only one city can bid for the games. That's the rules of the International Olympic Committee. And if you start moving things too far apart, they tend to look at your bid and say it's not viable.
Representative Dolan.
Can you give us some notion of what the seed money requirements are to get you to a point where you can seriously examine yourself and say yay or nay?
Last time around, we predicted that the cost to submit a bid to the United States Olympic Committee would be about $1 million. This is what we were estimating. We thought we could do it on a cheaper $500,000, too. Somewhere between those two numbers is a correct number. That's to get to the U.S. level. At the same time, Calgary looked at much the same problems that we have here. You have skepticism. You have doubt. You have people who go, why spend money doing that when you could be using it someplace else? There's always someplace better to put the money. Always. You know, there's everybody needs help. Everybody needs money. Essentially, what happened with Calgary was that, as I talked to Frank King, who was the president of the Calgary Olympic Games, he said, we just went out and created some art pieces, had them commissioned for $100,000 or so, a nice bronze statue, made miniatures, and sold the miniatures for $50,000 each to corporations. And CEOs love to have them sitting in their lobby going, I bought one of those so we could get the Olympic Games. And each time they needed more money, they'd go out and commission another piece. So it really comes down not just the legislature. It is the will of business, and it is the will of the people and the will of the legislature. But somebody has to take the first step.
Representative Barnhart.
That was my question.
Very good. Very good. Vice Chair Lim.
And one of the, thank you, Mr. Chair, the concerns we might have, how much will it cost? Are we going to have the expenses paid back? At least the cost neutral. And could we do that? Or are we going to lose and later it paid back? Or could we get the sponsorship around the world, make the cost more neutral, or could we make some profit out of it?
Oh, I think there's a profit there. If you're talking about could you be paid back for the initial funding that comes from the legislature, where the money would actually come back to the legislature, I don't know technically whether that could be allowable or not, but at the same time, an organization could and would and would have to essentially invest in the community where funds would be established to maintain the facilities, also to invest in individual communities and various processes. So monies would come from around the world overall so that the games would come out as paid for by income, by sponsorship, and rights sales. This is what happened in Calgary. Frank King, again, when I asked him one time, I said, well, they had a legislative piece that stated that they could not show a profit. And I asked him, because I kept hearing these late sales that were going on. All of a sudden, they'd get another sponsorship for $40 million or $60 million or $100 million. And I'd say, wait a minute, you can't show a profit. You're late in the games. All the facilities are already built. What are you doing with this money? And he smiled at me and he said, well, every time we get more money in, we establish new programs to continue to operate all of the facilities into the future. And we underwrite the cost of these facilities so that they can continue to operate and develop Canadians as Olympians and winning Olympians. Did that answer your question?
Yes.
And,
please. Okay. Sometimes the quality of the snow we have in the Mount Hood might not be the one the Olympians want, and sometimes we might not have enough snow in the mountain. Could we create manually to have a Winter Olympic Games? Since I'm not expert on that area, you might be able to give us some assurance that should be a problem or no problem at all.
Well, let's deal with the condition of the snow first. We all know the Central Oregon in Bend, where I lived for 5 years and skied and loved it, has marvelous light powder snow. And we all know that Mount Hood is referred to as Mount Hood cement because of the high moisture content. Coming off the Pacific Ocean, carrying all of that water, drops it on Mount Hood, and there are days when you're up there. And I was the marketing director for Ski Bowl for a two-year time period. So I'm very familiar with what the snow conditions are there in both places. When you create a racetrack for skiing, you do not use the natural condition of the snow. The first thing you have to do is you bring in experts, and the experts already know what the slope looks like. But they condition the surface so that when you're running a downhill, what you as a normal skier would prefer is the nice, soft, smooth turns. What they want is a racetrack that's about that deep, absolutely controlled. It's just like an automobile racetrack. It's hard. When you hear those skis going across it and they're rattling, it's not because that's a nice, soft snow surface. That was last seen in 1948 in St. Moritz. Now they control the surface of it absolutely. And if it breaks down, they can stop the race and start all over again at a later date when they can get it under control. So the surface, it doesn't matter. They'll take care of that. When it comes to making snow, the advances in making snow are so great now compared to what they were even 20 years ago. There's snowmaking equipment. In Lake Placid in 1980, practically all of the snow for the downhill was manufactured snow. So, yes, you know, it's just a matter of having the machinery, putting it up, running it overnight. Even now during the daytime, you can make snow during the day. They just choose not to do it because skiers don't like skiing through snow while it's coming down, gets on their goggles, and they don't like it. So, yes, it can be done. When it comes to the manufactured ice, that's, speed skating, luge, bobsled, all of those. Yeah, if you look at Canada, I don't know if anybody's been to Calgary. They have their Olympic Park there. And at Olympic Park, they clustered ski jumping, which is acrobatics and various other bobsled, luge. And they put a huge refrigeration plant at the bottom that runs all of their refrigerating, including the ski jump area. So it can be handled. It's just a matter of will. You know, there's a series of questions that'll come up. Can you do this? Can you do that? We don't like this. We want this. We want that. The IOC does things like that. The sports do it individually. And Frank King told me, he says, you know, we came up with one answer when they'd come to us. Oh, we don't like the way that's done. And then you just look at them and say, no problem. How do you want it? And you just go ahead. The last thing that I caution you is that the International Olympic Committee is a European corporation that is operated by old line Europeans. It's changing a little bit, but not much. It's in Lausanne, Switzerland. When they decide where they're going to have their Olympic Games, they're essentially taking a family business and loaning it to you for about a 7-year time period. So in selecting a city, it's like getting married. Once you become an Olympic city, you're an Olympic city for the rest of your life. They want to find the good son-in-law or the good daughter-in-law. They want you to be part of the family because you will be family. And they want you to continue to represent them forever as an Olympic host city.
Representative Holby.
Just a final question. I know the Winter Olympics coming up 2010 is in Vancouver, Whistler, British Columbia. And given that's on the North American continent, I would expect there probably is a little pressure to have it on a different continent next
yes.
go around. So in reality, I mean, practically, are we talking how many Olympics away are we talking about?
Excellent question. You're looking at 2010 for BC. You're looking at 2014, which right now the bid cities are in the process of having visitations from the IOC. That's Sochi, Russia, Salzburg, Austria, and Pyeongchang, South Korea. I have to make certain I get that right, you know, Pyeongchang rather than
right.
Pyongyang. So those are the three cities, and they're bidding for 2018. So if you're looking at if we were looking at a time period where we would be attempting to become the U.S. representative, we would be looking at 2022 or 2026. Now, most people go, oh, well, that's so far away. But it's not. Because once the city is chosen for 2014, I got it wrong, 2018, 2022 for the next possible U.S. location. But you're really looking mostly at 2022. 2018, if it goes to Salzburg in 2014, you could be looking at an Asian site or yet another European site and then back to the United States. So you're looking at 2018, 2022, somewhere in there. And it takes that long to go through the process, because in the United States there's only about four locations. You're looking at Denver, Lake Placid, Salt Lake City, Portland, possibly the Reno Tahoe area, although Squaw Valley's already had it. They don't want it. They don't ever want it again. That's because they have their own image of what they're going to do now, and the Olympics is not part of it. So there's limited locations within the United States where you can host the Summer or Winter Olympic Games.
Vice Chair Lim.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. In the bill, House Bill 24-8, that is mentioned Olympic Games consisting of 12 members. And among the 12 members, the governor shall appoint from the higher education, from office of the governor, experience in sports marketing, and Oregon Tourism Commission, and then OECD, and from the sports authority. So out of these six groups, two of them each. Do you think we should add some more people from some other groups in it?
I don't think you need more people. You would wind up with support groups, subcommittees, other nonprofits that might join in the effort. I think that at this point, you know, you've covered just about every base from a governmental standpoint, and the information would percolate up.
Okay. Thank you.
Jack, could you give us a brief review of some of the economic development potential from the Winter Olympics should they come to Oregon?
Well, when you're looking at the Winter Olympic Games, you probably have 250,000 visitors in about a three-week time period overlapping. You know, you're traditionally a week in advance of the Games, 2 weeks in advance of the Games, all of the world's teams show up. And that's just only 3,000 people. But you're looking at 10,000 in the way of newspaper people. It was just stunning. You know, they outnumber athletes now 3-1. Sometimes in the summer games, you know, it's 5 or 6-1. You're looking at the visitors, and you have a split in the visitors. You've got those who are coming in to do it on the cheap, that are going to snag a room, a floor, a couch somewhere. And then you have those who rent houses for a four-week time period at astronomical rates, which is good for some people and bad for others. In Calgary, I stayed in a private residence, of which there were 14 of us staying in the house, and the cost of it over a one-week time period was close to $10,000. And it was an ordinary three-bedroom house, but there were 14 people jammed in there. So it is the number of people who come in, and as I used to like to say, is that we welcome them, we pat them on the back, we grab them by the ankles, we turn them upside down, we shake all the change out of their pockets, pat them on the tush, and send them home and tell them they had a good time. So it becomes so it comes essentially from all of those people bringing their money, because they want to be at a world-class event in a place they've never been before. And so they can tell their friends about it. And there's a quarter of a million of them. People say 250,000 people, oh, it's gonna burden us. Well, not really. When you look at the number of flights that are going in and out of Portland, the number of people that are passing through right now, it means a few more airplanes parked on the edge of the aprons when they bring in a national airline, and the plane stays here. You really don't see them because they are scattered out. When you go to the Olympic Games, you have to travel 60 miles between venues. And sure, there's a lot of people in one location, but when you scatter them out over 12 or 14 different locations, it's not a lot of people at that time. So I would say the money comes from the people who come. The money comes from the revenue to build the facilities. That's large. And the improvements that you need on that in advance, which might be, could be highway infrastructure, it could be parking lots, it could be continued economic development after the games. So one of the reasons the IOC likes to move things around is that once they get these facilities in a location, then they can bring events back afterwards. As you see in Salt Lake City now, they're hosting skiing events, luge events, bobsled events, figure skating, speed skating. They didn't just stop. They're continuing on. They will be back in the future for a 20 to 30 year window.
Representative Dahl.
We have a, with the economic development people, we have a dollar figure spent per person on several venues, not all, but do you have some notion that 25,000 or 250,000 people, what does each leave in Oregon after you sat them on the... No. I'll leave your example with you. How much do they spend a piece?
How much would they spend per day?
A piece. How much do they leave in Oregon a piece? Do you have any notion?
Oh, boy. I can only tell you when I go to a three-day meeting with the United States Olympians in Colorado Springs on my airplane, which is about half the fee and what I spend there. You know, it's $500 for 3 days. You know, and I do it cheap. I'm really... You know, a cheap date, because I don't eat in the fine restaurants. When you're looking at people at that level who are willing to spend $10,000 or $20,000 on a home rental, I don't know what their budgets are. I can't imagine that. But a lot. I can tell you that I've, in the years of racing, when I was in the luge and running around the world, and I visited places like Garmisch, Germany, and St. Moritz, Switzerland, and I've been in Calgary and Lake Placid and all the various others. The people that I ran into, I was not part of their cultural society. They spent money like there was no tomorrow. I was a peanut butter and jelly guy who was drinking coffee in the morning and trying to get by to get to the Olympic Games. But I would estimate that a person would, you know, when you come to travel and everything else, you're looking at $5,000 to $10,000 a head just for a 1 week stay. Most don't stay the full 2 weeks. They can't take it. It's exhausting. It's really tiring just to go and be a spectator. Because you're everywhere all the time. You're constantly planning, moving, getting up in the morning, going out, coming back. It's just exhausting.
Thank you.
Okay, just one more.
Yes, Vice Chair Lim.
To be realistic, Jack, and how much do you think we need initial funds, at least to begin with? And then in case if we were able to get maybe $50,000, for instance, do you think you shall be able to get the matching funds from the private aid groups?
The last time we did this, it was the matching funds were for every $2 we raised, $1 came from the state. And I think that the total amount of monies that we did get from the state was somewhere around $70,000 to $100,000. I'd have to go back and check the records. So at that time, we were looking at about $300,000 between 1984 and 1989. I would say it would need $500,000 over a 5-year time period in order to just cover the costs of the studies of the engineering that you might have to commission to review and update. So $500,000 in that time period just to get yourself organized.
Okay. Thank you very much.
Jack, thank you very, very much.
Much pleasure.
Appreciate your testimony and all the material that you brought with you.
Well, anytime anybody wants to talk about the Olympics, I'm ready. I love it. Oh, I brought something along, and this is the... What happens when you become a bid city is all of a sudden you start dealing in the pin collectors. So I brought along a pin for each one of you, and it is the current United States Olympians, as we call it, a giveaway pin. So that when you pick this up and put it on and somebody goes, oh, you're an Olympian, you can go, no, an Olympian gave me this. It's because we're talking about bidding for the Winter Olympic Games. And I just want to be able to remind you that. Do I just leave them up here? Shall I distribute them?
You can give them to our assistant, please.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you very, very much, Jack.
Are they under $10?
Yes, you know, Jack, what the Olympics would cost. What do the pins cost?
Yeah. Are they under $10?
Well, you'll see on these they have stickers that say Made in China.
Next, I'd like to call up Hasina Squires from the Oregon Sports Authority.
Thank you. Good morning, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. For the record, Hasina Squires on behalf of the Oregon Sports Authority. The testimony that's being distributed actually indicates that I'm Drew Mihalik, the CEO of Oregon Sports Authority, and clearly I'm not. He was unable to be here, is like most sane people, out on spring break this week, which I think you're going to hear a lot of that this week. People just having a hard time getting people to be able to come and testify due to spring break. So, we're here today to support House Bill 2804. The Oregon Sports Authority is a private nonprofit organization with a board that represents both public and corporate leaders of the state of Oregon. Our goal is to promote economic development and increase the usage of spectator facilities and sports venues. And to enhance Oregon's image as a big league sports destination, and this bringing the Winter Olympics to the state of Oregon would clearly fit that mission. We also coordinate efforts to bid for, promote, and manage quality sports marketing events that make sense for the state of Oregon during our 12 years in, as Oregon sports marketing arm. Our organization has successfully brought more than 70 events to the state of Oregon and an economic impact of over $100 million. Some of our major achievements include landing the 2009 men's NCAA basketball tournament, which is going to be very exciting, and I can't wait for that. U.S. Figure Skating Championships, the Women's World Cup Soccer, and the Do Action Sports Tour. We're also the driving force behind bringing Major League Baseball, not to be controversial, NHL, NFL, and a major soccer league franchise to Oregon. We plan to learn a lot from the 2010 Olympics in Vancouver, B.C. Those Olympics are slated to bring several billion dollars to the economy in Vancouver, B.C., and so we're very supportive of this legislation. It takes the very first step necessary to study and look at bringing the Winter Olympics to the state of Oregon. If I can answer any questions, I'd be happy to.
Thank you very much, Hasina. Questions or comments? I'm not seeing any, but it certainly looks like
Thank
Oregon.
Thank goodness for Jack.
It appears that the Oregon Sports Authority has been very active in terms of attracting major sports venues here. So keep up the good work.
Thank you.
Thanks for your appearance. Anyone else that would like to testify today on House Bill 2804? I'm not seeing anyone. We're going to close the public hearing on that bill. Representative Lim, I think you're on deck for our next one.
Yes, thank you.
I'd like to open a public hearing on House Joint Resolution 15 and recognize Representative Lim.
Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, again. John Lim is my name, from the House Representative from District 50, which is the Gresham area. And Mr. Chair and members of the committee, thank you very much for this hearing a possible work session on HJR 15. As I mentioned before, HJR 15 and is the resolution, and possibly it's encouraging, it is not required, but encouraging the governor to appoint the goodwill trade ambassador for the state of Oregon. It doesn't cost any money. Possibly, maybe might be able to, the governor from his own funds or her funds might be able to pay in case if it's absolutely necessary to pay for basic expenses, but the governor is not required to pay any of those expenses. What we are trying to do, possibly the governor may be able to appoint ambassador from our state to each respected major trading partners of the all around the world, or that the governor might be able to appoint a person in each country, possibly a retired ministerial level personnel to represent our state. Already we have that the major trade offices in Japan and Korea, Taiwan, and China. We have a contracted office, possibly one person in South America, and we need to continue to expand around the world. Already we are exporting about $12 billion around the world, mostly in Canada and the Pacific Rim countries, but we cannot satisfy what we have at this time. We need to continue to expand around the world, even Africa, Europe, Russia, even China, Asia. and South America, around the world, we need to look at any possibility to promote our trade, create the jobs and economic development of our state. And that HJR 15 simply augmenting the things we have. It doesn't take over any other agencies, any other commissions, but simply augmenting them, helping them without costing too much money to create more jobs and economic development. This will create a goodwill. And right now at the governor's office, and we don't have even a lieutenant governor in our state. And even I have introduced a position of a lieutenant governor in our state. The bill doesn't move at all in the committee. And this is not for me. I want you to know I'm not running for lieutenant governor. So let me upfront tell you that it is not creating a position for myself, but I'm trying to do something good for the state, for the future of our country. And this is one of the same. If we couldn't create a lieutenant governor, let's create something goodwill ambassador for the many other countries around the world. Because some of the people and that retired from the high government office in that country, they might be happy having just the honorary ambassador, trade ambassador for the state of Oregon. You know, they can introduce themselves, or they are representing the state of Oregon. So let's do something good for our state. Because of that, I introduce HJR 15. Thank you very much, Mr. Chair and members of the committee.
Thank you very much, Vice Chair Lim. Question for our colleague, Representative Boldy.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative, I know international trade is something we definitely need to keep our eye on and always looking to expand our capabilities and participating in trade across our oceans. But I'm curious what you think or what this bill does as far as the ambassador's role. What essentially are they going to be able to do that our International Trade Commission isn't already able to do?
Okay, Mr. Chair and Representative Harvey, you always ask good questions, and I appreciate that. In my opinion, trade relationships, as I mentioned before, it begins with a personal relationship. Let me give you just a small example. Back in Korea, you know, we have a two-man an office in Korea Trade Office. The person, Mr. Kim, is working hard. He has been there almost 20 years. When I visit there, sometimes I feel some lack of strong leadership. And then I felt if someone has a position as an honorary goodwill trade ambassador who has retired from the South Korean government as a high-ranking government officials might be able to advise him and the state of Oregon that with his connection of business connection and government connections, he might be able to help us to lead in the right way. And I think we are lacking in that area. In Asia especially, if you want to have a strong trade relationship, you need to know our right connection, such as high government officials, such as a high caliber trade businessmen in Korea. I don't see a strong connection in there. With the creation of this person, the person might be able to give us a strong and the right direction to meet certain person. With that connection, we might be able to enhance our trade opportunity in the future.
Representative Barnhart.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Lim, I appreciate your bringing this resolution. As I read the resolution, we might designate, or the governor might designate, people who regularly live and do business or have done business in the cities or the provinces that we're interested in, what would be the motivation of a, I mean, I'm imagining a person who's been active in business, a member of the equivalent of the Chamber of Commerce there, a citizen of the country, very well connected in the business community locally. What would be the motivation of a person like that to accept this kind of assignment? Why would someone do that?
Thank you, the Chair and the Representative Barnhart. The country I came from, Korea, money is important, but the honor is important. Like I'm a state representative, like you are, I'm not doing this for money, because it's money-wise, you know, I lost millions of dollars. If I'm a businessman, I should be a billionaire by now. But getting elected for the $900 position when I was a state senator, I spent close to $300,000 of my own money. So simply money is not the issue. The honor that the elected position to serve the state is a great thing. Someone, maybe the governor, appointing one person in Korea who is retired, and maybe some kind of international actions, the person like to be involved, giving the person that the ambassador title, giving him the, in the society, in the country, greater position to influence. I think this is a strictly matter of honor, not the money. And so if someone wants to serve it, it is not in a position to make any money, but the access and the connection and the honor and privilege, I believe I can say that.
Thank you.
Additional questions? Representative Lim, thank you very, very much.
Thank you very much, Mr. Chair.
Is there anyone else that would like to testify today on House Joint Resolution number 15? Please come forward. Good morning, Bill.
Good morning, sir. Chair Witt, for the record, Bill Clinton, Carpenters Industrial Council. The term world trade perked my ears up. We have a chance here to move forward. Oregon could be a centerpiece as far as world trade, except the Port of Portland is maxed out. The state of Washington is maxed out as far as the super tankers, cargo container ships. There's only one port left on the West Coast, and that's Coos Bay. We're looking at easily 5,000 good paying jobs. You've heard the term they use a lot now. You build it, they'll come. As we speak, the plans are in force to widen out the Panama Canal. The only competition right now is looking at building this facility is Mexico. We build this at Coos Bay. We have a direct shot to I-5. The Roseburg area would be the major distribution center, north-south on I-5, further on east, south into California. But if we wait and Mexico builds this, we'll have all the Mexican trucks driving up I-5 and all over Oregon. I'm completely in favor of Representative Lim's memorial. We need to draw attention to this port of Coos Bay. There's been a little working group that has been working on this for the last couple of years, but it's going to take a lot of funding. Dredging the Coos Bay, probably about 6 miles, but look at the facility that we could build. Look at the jobs. And as far as the state of Oregon, we have some sectors of this state that really need some economic boost, and the southeast part of Oregon is one of them. I urge this committee to pass this on and draw attention to the importance of the Port of Coos Bay. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Bill. Any questions? Appreciate your comments very much.
Thank you.
Not seeing anyone else that wants to speak on HJR 15, I'm going to close that public hearing.
Yes, I do, Mr. Chair. And the two gentlemen sitting out there came from the California area to be my intern. I have not met them yet, and I know they are coming, but we had an intern from California a couple weeks ago. They spread the word over there. So they like to be intern in our state, maybe about a week or so. I'd like to welcome them. And I do not know their names yet. Okay, but
but you'll find out.
I will find out for you, sir.
Okay,
welcome to our committee. And last up on today's schedule is House Bill 3298. And
We're carrying that over.
Excuse me, that's the one we're carrying over. That's the one we're carrying over until Wednesday when Representative Bruin is able to attend. So with that, is there anything more to come before our committee this morning? Not seeing anything. Ellen, would you please give us a brief preview of Wednesday's schedule? I took it, did I?
I'm sorry to say, I don't think I have the schedule right in front of me. So.
Okay. With that, hearing no further business to come before our, late breaking news.
Yes, Vice Chair Riley has saved me from frozen. So, Chair, members of the committee, on March 28th at 8 a.m. here in Hearing Room C, you all be having your first public hearing on House Bill 2264, which exempts the State Board of Education, the Department of Education, and Superintendent of Public Instruction from certain aspects of the public contracting code. And there are some amendments that have been forwarded to me by the proponents that will be in your offices. You're also hearing House Bill 3027, which appropriates money to the Economic and Community Development Department for the purpose of assisting development of targeted small businesses and micro enterprises. And you'll have your first public hearing on 3264, which is actually, I take that back. That one is the one that's being heard in revenue. And then you'll be having your first public hearing on 3298, which is the one that we carried from today.
Thank you very much. And with that, we stand adjourned until Wednesday.